Recognize Umbra Walker D01. Recognize the Caleb G D02.
Hello, team. Welcome to the cave. Thanks for listening to Whelmed, the Young Justice Files, episode 18. I am everyone's favorite sidekick, Caleb. And, you know, they sure don't make evil immortal sorcerers like they used to. And allow me to introduce Rich. He has the courage of Billy Batson. Howard!
I'm honored.
As always, thank you so much for listening and joining in today. If you would like to get a hold of us, reach out on Twitter at the YJ Files. The show's email is whelmedpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, the website is crashingthemode.com.
I would do anything to get my daughter back. Yes, but we both know there are many ways for you to lose her.
So, not that desperate. Not yet.
With that housekeeping out of the way, I will turn it over to Rich for...
Hello, Megan!
Hey, everybody. This week's episode title is Misplaced. The release date is March 3rd, 2012. What happened to November? So, 3-month jump. Bam. And we're off the rails again. So our last episode last time was Secrets, which Caleb and I both were underwhelmed by. And then we had a 3-month break into an awesome episode, but after 3 months. These delays wouldn't help any show, much less a show that's far more serial than it is episodic. The end episode date starts on November 5th and then goes to November 6th. The director was Michael Chang and the writer was our Greg Weissman.
Definitely had a few special guest voices today. Chad Lowe is back. Kevin Michael Richardson is back. And if anyone does not know the name D. Bradley Baker, you certainly know his voice.
Yeah, you too. He's everywhere.
And he is here as well. So with that wrapped up, I think we should head over to our mission briefing. We have a lot to figure out today.
Just in time for your next mission.
All right, so our pre-credit scene is Clarion, the witch boy, appears in a field on Roanoke and places the Arbre Jeune Perdu, which in French means the Amber of Lost Youth, in the ground. He then summons Felix Faust, Wizard, Blackbriar Thorn, and Wotan to assist him in a ritual. They suddenly then begin chanting in German, Wir sind die Pfeifer von Hamelin, which means we are the Pipers of Hamelin, as we fade over to the cave. Batman, Red Tornado, and Zatara are helping Superboy, McGann, Wally, Zatanna, and Artemis unload supplies from the bioship when suddenly all of the adults disappear.
At Billy Batson's apartment, Uncle Dudley disappears, as do Cat Grant and all of the adults on Billy's street. Billy stops just before changing to Captain Marvel, realizing that as an adult, he may disappear too. Back in the cave, the team is sifting through social media sites to determine the extent of the disappearances, which are worldwide, and also turn Happy Harbor High into a refuge center for kids. Zatanna says that scary amounts of magical energy are required to make this happen. Robin brings up the recording of Zatara using the locator spell from Revelations, but Zatanna is not sure she can pull it off.
Back with Billy, Billy's desperately trying to get to the watchtower, but when he tries to use one of the leaks, I'm sorry, I love this scene. To use one of the League's hidden Zeta transporters, the computer doesn't recognize him as Captain Marvel, even when he uses the override, because he's in Billy's body. When he manages to see the team sending a worldwide message over regular TV and radio waves, he realizes that he can more easily make it to the cave than the watchtower. Billy sneaks onto an airfield and recruits the help of a girl named Amber to help him fly to Happy Harbor. Amber turns 18 at midnight, therefore becoming an adult, and disappears. Back in the cave, Aqualad and Kid Flash, both who have worn the Helmet of Fate in the past, discuss how badly they may need it now, and they decide against it, but just barely.
Billy is left alone in the plane with the only option of turning into Captain Marvel. He does so, then realizes he didn't disappear and manages to catch a falling Amber, then heads to the cave. Then we get a time jump. Back in the cave, we see the same scene as the beginning of the episode, except from the adult's perspective and all the kids disappear. In the world of adults, Sportsmaster, in his civilian ID, riles up a crowd to attack police guarding a Star Labs facility, while Riddler emerges from the facility with a case. Batman and Zatara have a parallel conversation as Aqualad and Kid Flash about using the helmet and also decide against it. Captain Marvel then arrives in the cave expecting to see the team, but instead sees Batman and Zatara. This is when he realizes there are two worlds.
Right. So after chatting with Batman and Zatara, Marvel transforms back to Billy, which shunts him out of the adult world and back into the world of young adults and kids. Of course, he appears without warning in the cave, and the team standing there, and they don't recognize him until McGann scans him telepathically, and they're shocked to find out that he is actually Captain Marvel. Billy goes back and forth between the worlds, helping to organize a two-pronged attack on Clarion and his allies.
Both groups attack the group of sorcerers, but Clarion is able to hold off the team with little effort. Zatara realizes that the gem is the source of Clarion's ritual, and Captain Marvel relays the message to the team, who are losing badly. Zatanna has brought the Helmet of Fate with her, and in a moment of desperation, and to the horror of Aqualad, Kid Flash, and frankly us, she dons the helmet.
Yeah. So both the team and the League eventually manage to disrupt the ritual and gain control of the gem. Zatara and the Zatanna Fate combo destroy the magic of the gem and merge the two worlds. Unfortunately, that leaves Zatanna still with the helmet of Dr. Fate on. Nabu refuses to release her. When Kid Flash argues that Kent Nelson would never allow that, Nabu informs the team that Kent Nelson objected strenuously, so Nabu released him to go to the afterlife. Zatara then offers himself to Nabu in Zatanna's place and seals his deal with a magical spell. Nabu agrees, and Zatanna watches her father become the new and permanent Dr. Fate.
In our final scene, Zatanna tearfully moves into the cave with McGann and Superboy. We also discover why Clarion pulled his stunt in the first place. The case Nygma stole from Star Labs was the regenerating piece of the giant echinoderm we saw back in the episode Downtime. And with that mission being briefed, we need to jump right into Feeling the Aster, because there is so much to talk about.
Superboy, are you alright?
I'm fine. Feeling the Aster.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite episodes for a few reasons. It does, though, have some oddities in it, so I'm going to get those out of the way first. People disappear from each world, but all of the objects, right, so the cars and buildings and the Helmet of Fate, exist in both realities, with one exception, and that one exception is Amber's plane. We see the scene where the guy's driving his car and he's got his son in the back seat. The son is in the car because Superboy pulls him out in the teenage world. We later on see the adult driver get in a car accident because he's worried that his son's not in his car. So the car exists in both locations. Yet when Amber turns into an adult, she disappears, but the plane doesn't disappear with her. She then falls. So it makes for a dramatic moment, and it's interesting, and you know, if you don't think about it too much. But it's one of those little details that when you're dealing with an episode like this where you're jumping worlds and that kind of thing, it can tend to jump out. Outside of that, though, there is a lot of really interesting stuff going on in this episode, and it kills me every time.
This is one of my absolute favorite episodes. As we've said many times here, I love Zatanna and Zatara so much. I love the magical side of the DC universe, and this episode was pretty much completely devoted to magic. I loved how when Clarion was doing his ritual, they had to be at a crossroads, which is a fun little mythological nod to magic and dark dealings. It's especially a reference, I think, to the series Supernatural, which is one of my favorite shows.
I actually didn't watch Supernatural, so I don't know. But crossroads are pretty common mythological places for things like that.
Yeah, it's always a place where someone makes a deal, usually with a demon or a higher power, so it fits in. And specifically, this crossroads was on Roanoke Island.
Yeah, exactly.
And you had a couple points about that, Rich.
I mean, everything in this episode is very classic Greg Weisman Young Justice, which is nothing is in here for no reason, right? The name of the pilot's name was Amber, which is a reference to the Amber Alert. She's given a name of a character from the comics who's a little bit different than who she turns out to be. But I mean, this whole episode is basically a big Amber Alert, right? And then what you're talking about, the Roanoke Island, Roanoke Colony was a colony that mysteriously disappeared back in the day that we still don't know what happened to it, that had just some random stuff carved into trees, random words we don't know. And then the whole colony's gone and we never found out what happened to them. So the fact that this is on Roanoke is a really interesting choice, which again also feeds into this idea that Tikal was like, no, this is the place. So maybe in Young Justice, something about disappearing or whatever happened at that colony. And then, man, like other stuff, like the Pied Piper of the Vercinthi Pfeiffer von Hamelin. The first time I heard it, I was like, oh, whatever. Well, I took German in high school, though, and so I was like, that doesn't sound like Latin. What is that? And I sat and listened to it for a minute, and I'm like, are they saying they're the Pied Pipers of Hamelin? Is that what's happening right now? And then we don't find out about the gem's name until the end when Zatara calls it out, and that's in French. And I was just like, okay, well, that also makes sense. Like, there's just so much little details put in every little piece of this episode. It's amazing.
This episode also featured Captain Marvel / Billy Batson. And even without Rob Lowe's voice behind the animation, Captain Marvel is just flat out one of my favorite characters.
He's so good in this. I love the idea that they didn't interpret the wisdom of Solomon as some kind of sage-ish intelligence, like studied intelligence. Like they merged the idea of Billy's childlike imagination and childlike view of the world with the wisdom of Solomon. They didn't make them mutually exclusive in some way. He's still Billy as an adult with access to a different perspective. I like that they did that. I think it's fantastic. They did a similar take in Justice League Unlimited as well with him, that he still was Billy to an extent.
And in the DC animated movie War, Captain Marvel had a huge part in that, and he was still very much Billy after he had transformed, almost to a fault, almost to the ruination of the League's plans. But it was fun to see Billy still being there. A big thing that happened here, this is also when the team, and I'm pretty sure the League, learns who Billy really is.
Yeah, this is the episode that forces Billy to reveal who he is. Now, we've seen it because we're allowed to see behind the scenes when he's at home with Uncle Dudley and that kind of thing. So we get it. But this is the first time the League is exposed to Billy's alternate identity. And we'll talk about it in Crashing the Moat a little bit, but there's one particularly key leaguer who isn't super shocked. In fact, seems to know exactly what was going on. I love it. This is such a great way of using Billy. And it's such a simple, like in a role-playing game, as we talk about, he's basically like in a champions game. He just spent 5 points on instant change. I guess maybe it might have been, you know, some kind of shape-shifting powers, whatever you want, multi-form or something if you want to do that. But one way or the other, it's just a special effect of how he turns from a little boy into a superhero. But they use that as a plot point for an entire episode and in the comic as well, because this was drawn from a comic that happened in DC Comics as well, which I'll talk about a little later.
There were lots of little details in this episode. I liked how the override codes continue to show an appearance with Billy trying to get into the Zeta tubes. That is such a funny scene.
It's so great.
There's a nice little moment here where the team addresses the world of kids. And I thought it was funny because when I first watched it, I said, oh, cool, they're using their world address system again, just like that last episode. Oh, wait a minute, that last episode didn't happen.
That was failsafe, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So it was cool to see them doing the same thing, but this time in reality.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked from a storytelling standpoint that the story flipped back and forth between dimensions. And I really liked how it kind of reset to the start of the story to change perspective to the adult's world.
Yeah. And the trigger for that, though, which I loved, was Billy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Billy point of view episode, basically.
Yeah.
Because we don't know that the adult world exists until the moment Billy switches worlds, and then we get the time flip back, which was just very smooth and well done.
Mm-hmm. I loved the little detail of Nigma and Sportsmaster, because I did not realize it was them in the crowd.
Yeah, I didn't either, yeah.
Yeah, until the end when I saw them stealing stuff, then I put it together.
Because I think this is the first time that we see Sportsmaster without his hockey mask, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
so. I'm pretty sure that's it.
I think we might have seen his face in a file somewhere, like on one of Batman's profiles or something.
It's possible. That's possible, yeah.
But this is the first time we see him walking around in civvies, not his crazy superhero, supervillain costume.
Right, right.
One of the things that I thought was a little bit weird, and obviously it was because of the plot, was which dimension Clarion was in. Because, I mean, he mm-hmm. is a kid, but he's also an immortal demon.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, and I think that he is Clarion the Witch Boy. Like, biologically, he's 16, right? His name is Clarion, but really his full name in the comics is Clarion the Witch Boy. I think biologically, as far as this kind of magic is concerned, it triggers him as being young. And I think that also may be part of his chaos magic. I kind of get it, but I can see where you're talking about, too. I definitely had to put some thought into that one and see how I felt about it.
That makes sense now that you explain it that way. The last thing we have to talk about here is about the ending, about Zatanna and Zatara.
I can't talk about it.
That's fine. I'll talk about it. This is...
I need to go walk around the room for a minute.
You need to throw some silverware.
I do.
This is a brutal ending. However, it worked perfectly. The entire episode, again, put the team at odds. They had no chance to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
The solution was right there the entire time. And we saw the tension and the drama of them not wanting to use that solution because they knew the consequence.
Yeah.
So props to Young Justice for keeping this theme, but not overusing this theme. And for keeping those consequences heavy and permanent.
Yeah. The conversation between Batman and Zatara was important because it gave a little information about what was going on in their world. Like, you know, the League is doing X and Y, and it's just Red Tornado and you and me and blah, blah, blah. But there's a key point in that conversation where they're talking about whether to use the helmet or not. And this was the intro quote we pulled for this episode. It's so interesting because it planted a seed in us, subconscious or not, as watchers, of this potentially horrifying choice that he was not going to make, and that this has serious consequences. And then there was no other choice than to choose those consequences. And now some people could argue that, like, he didn't have to do that. She could have stayed Dr. Fate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm a dad. If my wife wasn't around, because we know he's a single dad, if I had no other children, if I didn't have my son, it was me and my daughter, you better damn well know that I am going to make exactly the same deal with Naboo that he did. It was beautiful and loving and supportive and heartrending, and it all made sense.
And they both kind of had to make a similar choice. Zatanna... Yeah. Chose to pick up the helmet knowing what she knew about it, that there was a chance she would not walk away.
Yeah.
And she, in her youth, with her entire life ahead of her, having been thrown into this family of heroes and sidekicks and crazy situations, she made that same choice. She didn't make it with the same weight that Zatara did. He made a different choice, but it still had the same motivation going into it.
Yeah. She had to make that choice, but then she also has to see the consequences, right? If she hadn't have done that, the team may not have succeeded at all. And she knows that, but she still has to watch her father make this terrible choice. And she understands, I know she understands why he made that choice, but she can't help but blame herself. You just look at this and go, yep, this is terrible, and I don't see any other choice that could have been made. This is the choices that needed to be made with the stuff that was in front of them, and it was a gut punch. And that one simple scene where Zatara kisses her on the forehead. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. God. Young Justice, again, does not hesitate from the emotional punches of dealing with these types of consequences. Yeah. I also think it's important to note that Kent got booted hard in this episode.
Yeah, he did object. So I released him. And then there's that just that beat where everybody's like, oh no.
Right, because essentially the spirit of Kent Nelson was keeping Naboo in check.
Yep.
And Naboo just said, nope, I'm done. I need to take over.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that he chose to do it now.
But it makes sense to me. Actually, I'm going to talk about this in a little more detail in the Canary debrief because, yeah, this freaking helmet storyline is so good. You had another point here about the Zatanna fate combo.
Yeah, I don't think I paid attention to it a lot the first two or three times around, but when I was rewatching it for this week, I noticed that when Zatanna put on the helmet, it was very clearly still Zatanna's body. Yet, the other times when Kid Flash and Calder put on the helmet, it seemed to be much more of a generic adult dude wearing the helmet.
I don't think I agree with you on that one, though.
Really?
I think that if you look at those previous episodes, the Kid Flash fate is short. It is clearly Kid Flash's body. And I seem to remember, and I'd have to go back and look again, when Aqualad had the helmet on, he's mostly covered in a uniform, but you can see where his eyes are under the helmet that it's still his darker skin. So I'm pretty sure that it may have been a perspective, because he's flying a lot and it's at weird angles, and I can see how it might look like an adult body when it was actually, I think, still just their bodies.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that. It jumped out at me at this point.
Now she's got long flowing hair instead of short hair under the helmet, and I mean, pretty obvious signals, which makes a lot of sense, right? It makes a lot of sense that it looks clearly differently than the other ones would have, for sure.
Yeah, this was just the first time I think I noticed it, so maybe that was just more on me. But with that out of the way, I think we do need to move on to our Canary debrief.
Stick around. Class is in session.
I'm subtitling this Canary debrief, Chekhov's Helmet. There's a dramatic principle in, it's mostly theater, but it can be pretty much anything, known as Chekhov's Gun. And it's named after Anton Chekhov, who came up with the basic principle. And the idea goes like this. You remove everything from your story that has no relevance to the story. And it's reflected in the idea that if you say that in the first chapter there's a rifle hanging on the wall, in a later chapter, that rifle needs to go off. If it's not going to be fired or referenced or there for a reason, it shouldn't be in the story. The Helmet of Fate is one of many, many Chekhov's guns in this series. So we were shown that Naboo wants a conduit badly. We've seen it twice so far. And the only reasons Naboo didn't keep those conduits were, one, because Wally had no affinity for magic, and two, because Kent Nelson fought to have Calder released. And Calder could have been a fantastic conduit for him. Not for us, but for him. With Zatanna wearing the helmet and Naboo telling us directly that he's released Kent into the afterlife, it makes complete sense that we might never see Zatanna again. So they've made this character, Zatanna in this case, someone we love already, and we haven't even seen her in but a few episodes, and we're hurting for her, and we're hurting for Zatara. But Zatara steps up, is able to make a pledge using magic to promise that he donned the helmet, which is pretty much the only way that that could happen, because Naboo isn't going to trust anybody else to put the helmet on if he takes it off, if they're just talking to him, right? And the conclusion is so painful and built so organically over so many episodes that as many times as I watch this scene, I tear up every time. So when you put a Chekhov's gun in a scene, the anticipation, the connection the watcher or the reader have about that item, the callbacks you can make to that item to remind people that it's there, hopefully subtly, can build this anticipation in a way that few other things can. And this episode, it just proves it. We knew what was going to happen before it happened, but only seconds before it happened, meaning we had enough time to be concerned about the consequences of what was, is that going to happen? Oh my gosh, is he going to, oh no, 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 no. Like, you can see it because we're taking that emotional ride with the characters in the scene. We are not being shown something. We are being allowed to experience something. So, Chekhov's helmet, man. Use it.
And I think it's also worthwhile to note once again here that when you are writing a story, creating a story, telling a story, you should not hesitate from consequences.
Yes.
Let the consequences be there. This is kind of one of those moments where we're saying we're sacrificing one character for another.
Yeah.
And in a video game, that happens frequently. In a role-playing game, maybe not as much, because maybe we're sacrificing a PC, and that player then has to make that choice of what to do to move forward.
Right.
But the impact of these consequences, as heavy as it is, makes for a far better story.
It does, and it also fulfills another goal, which I've spoken earlier about. If you have two characters filling the same role, you need to question why those two characters are in that role. Why do you need both of them? In some cases, it works. You have Tio Maro, who builds androids, and you have Professor Ivo, who builds androids. In this case, it works for the storyline for a few different reasons, and they've made it work. In this case, they've had Dr. Fate, who's a powerful sorcerer, who uses different kinds of magic than Zatara. And Zatara has been there, like an established old friend of Batman and an established member of the League. But they've managed to bring both of these characters together to a point that makes so much sense, again, organically. They can combine Zatara and Dr. Fate into one magical powerhouse character to be used later on in the series, which we do. We see him again in season two. We assume it's Zatara. Technically, I don't think we know it's Zatara. And so we can have that and not have to worry about, as writers or running a game, balancing out two of these characters that fill the same role.
Okay, so I think this debrief is over, and it is time to crash the mode.
Tell us something we don't know yet.
Sorry, BB. We can't risk altering the time stream. We do that, we're all feeling the mode.
As always, when we are crashing the mode, we are going to be discussing spoilers specifically for both seasons of Young Justice, but also for the DC universe in general. If you do not want to be spoiled about Young Justice, please stop listening right now and join us later. If you are still listening, we're going to start crashing.
Starro. Starro's back.
Yay!
Yay, Starro. I agree with you. I totally forgot what, at the end when they showed the thing. I was like, oh, that was Nygma and Sportsmaster, and they were stealing Starro because they had it taken to the surface world and got it out of the hands of the Atlanteans, and oh, interesting, right? But it was such a quick scene in the chaos. It's what they wanted.
And it is a nice payoff to what happened back from Atlantis. It's a great way to remind us as viewers about the meta plot now that we are moving even closer to the end of season one. It's a great way to ramp up the excitement, because now we know, oh yeah, the light's still out there. The light's still doing something. Because we had quite a few episodes where the light was either not there or was so far in the background, they pretty much weren't doing anything.
Yeah.
So this was a great way to remind us all about what was going on. And also a really great way to remind us about the extent of what the light will go through to accomplish their goals.
Yeah, exactly.
To steal one tiny little thing, they said, let's get this crazy Lord of Chaos to split the reality in two.
You know, I thought about this, and I think what they did was they were like, we need a distraction. And they all, like six of them, turned and looked at Clarion. And they're like, okay, just don't destroy the world. Okay. Oh, you just split the world in two. All right, well, and even Brain makes a comment about it at the end where he's just like, although your methods are extreme. Oh, there I go with the accents again. It did what we needed to do. Also, what I found interesting that I only just realized right now, we have seen Nygma now trying to like get in the pockets of like, no offense to Icicle, but a minor mob boss in a prison and nobody wanted him and blah, blah, blah. Yet he escapes from prison and somehow manages to get in with the light. I'm thinking he may have convinced them, oh, you need something from Star Labs? I know how to get into Star Labs and get out of Star Labs. Because I think he's smarter than we think he is.
Yeah, this version of Enigma is not the silly, riddle-spewing buffoon we have seen other versions of the Riddler be. This is a very smart, very clever, very hacker-oriented criminal.
Yeah, absolutely. The Riddler that we've seen in some of the live action movies and some other things, people have had a hard time figuring out what to do with Riddler, because the Riddler that we had in the 1960s Batman, it was really over the top and theatrical and blah, 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 has kind of been shanked by Joker now. He's the over-the-top showman, crazy, blah, blah, blah. So now it's like, okay, well, now Joker's filling this role differently. He's not just a psychopath. He's crazy and you know, theatrical and blah, blah, blah in a way that Riddler used to be. And now people don't know what to do with him on a writing standpoint. It's a different take from Riddler. People who are Riddler fans may not be super happy about him being bottom rung on the villain ladder, but I don't know. I don't mind him. I don't mind this Riddler at all. If they used him more, I might be more bugged, but they use him just enough, I think.
Yeah, I really like this version of Riddler. I'll take every version of Riddler for what he is in the context of where he is.
Mm-hmm.
The old school Frank Gorshin from the 60s era, he was goofy, he was silly, but everything in that version of Batman was just over the top ridiculous. And we've seen versions of Riddler where he's an insane killer who is somehow obsessed with riddles for no apparent reason. Yeah. We've seen versions where he is much more a computer and tech driven character. They've all felt okay for their context. This one, he's subtle. He's in the background. We don't really know what made him the Riddler, why he is the Riddler, but we see him as a thief. And we see him as an asset to a more powerful villain. And I think I really like that version of him.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I want to see if they do something else with him. Neil told us that he was in the comics a little bit as well and some other things. So,
yeah, we'll see what happens in season three.
Yeah. So the other thing I want to talk about in Crashing the Mode was when Batman says, "Where were you?" Because he knows. That's why he's asking. He's like, "Where have you been?" Billy Batson, and he says, "A World Without Grown-Ups," which was actually the name of a Justice League of America comic two-parter that was the storyline that instigated the Young Justice DC Comics comic that had Robin and Superboy and Impulse, who were originally the Young Justice characters. And in that case, it was like a selfish kid. He's mad because his dad doesn't give him a certain present for his birthday, but he got this artifact. He ended up getting like this present from an antique store that ended up being an Atlantean artifact that gives him a bunch of power, and then he banishes all the adults to a parallel dimension. You know, it also had Billy Batson, which is where this idea comes from of him jumping back and forth between worlds. He performs kind of a similar storyline function and whatnot. They even include the cave and Happy Harbor and all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad that they didn't use this episode as the first episode of this TV series, though, because having a World Without Grown-Ups episode sets a different tone than they wanted for the series. This was fun. It was kind of horrifying, but also kind of silly, and it was cool. But like, this is supposed to be a little bit more grown-up storyline, so I'm glad that they waited a little later in the season and used it for what they needed to, which was to push the revelation of Billy Batson to the team and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, this gut punch Zatara Zatanna stuff.
And speaking about that, we should touch on that again. You said this a little bit earlier, but we don't see Zatara anymore. We only see Dr. Fate.
Yeah. And it was as I was kind of thinking about this episode where I was like, oh, yeah, well, we see Zatara in season two, but we never see him without the helmet on. And then I'm like, well, actually, we never saw him without the helmet on, so we don't know if it is Zatara technically. We assume it is. We don't see Zatara and Zatanna, or this Dr. Fate and Zatanna interact. She doesn't make any comments about saving her father. They do work together on some things. I'd be interested to see if there are more comics, maybe, that they explore what's going on with that, more season two comics, which they didn't have much of.
But it's also important to note here that this is the final instance of using Dr. Fate to solve the problem.
Yeah.
At no point beyond this episode does the team have the helmet on the shelf for that Hail Mary to save the world. Fate is now alive and functioning in the world, arguably as part of the Justice League, but probably off in the Tower of Fate doing his own thing, because as a Lord of Order, he is responsible for the universe.
Yeah, in the final episode, or the second to the final episode, he does technically become a full member of the League. Mm-hmm. And then he is on the Watchtower as well. Because I remember how he says, whatever, the Starro technology took over four flavors of Alien and an Android and Dr. Fate, you know, like all the same technology kind of thing. So I've always been a big Dr. Fate fan since I was a kid. I don't know why. So I really like that he's handled so beautifully in this series in general. Who knows what happened in that intervening 5 years? It could be not Zatara at all.
We just don't know. I'm sure it is. It's only 5 years. Naboo, as a Lord of Order, probably gives whatever host body he's in some form of extended life and protection.
Kent said they said he was 106 or something, right? So,
and they made the comment a couple times about how good at magic Zatara was. So obviously he's a prime candidate to be the host.
Right. Yeah,
it's probably exactly. Still Zatara.
I'm thinking, yeah.
But yeah, this definitely ends the chapter of Dr. Fate here in Young Justice. Now he's just Dr. Fate.
Yep.
So with all that being said, I think it is time to consider this mode crashed and wrap up with some fan service.
So I want to give a big thanks to listener Scarlet Catnip on Twitter. They have pointed us in the direction of a couple of things so far. The one that they pointed me to just earlier, what, today, is nacholumpia.tumblr.com/archive. We'll have that link in the show notes. There's a huge range of fan art on this site. There's some fantastic pieces of the Cassie Sands mark and Donna Troy Wonder Girls. If you're wondering who we're talking about when we talk about Donna Troy, you can, of course, Google her or whatnot. I don't know if there's a Donna Troy entry on the Young Justice Wikipedia because there's, so far, no Donna Troy in Young Justice. There's a Zatanna Robin kind of holding hands pair picture, which is cool, and they're in civilian clothes, which is kind of nice. There's a speculation piece of Leanne Harper, all grown up with a bow, which is really cool. There's a killer Stephanie Brown Robin that you'll see, and we've mentioned that in Crashing the Mode that Stephanie Brown makes an appearance in season 2 in the background and may grow up to become someone pretty key. Man, just so much more. So anyway, well done, Nacho Lumpia. I don't know your real name. We're going to send some people over to your archive to take a look at your stuff, and thanks so much for doing some awesome work.
And thanks again to Scarlet Catnip for pointing us in this direction. Fan service is a time for us to put a spotlight on all of your work out there in the listener world. So if you are a creator of anything about Young Justice or DC in general, if you as a listener just know a really cool resource for anything, fan art, fan fiction, videos, anything, let us know. We want to put these creators in the spotlight. We want to maybe get them on the show. We just want to highlight the parts of DC and Young Justice that we all love so very much.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much it for episode 18. It is time to wrap up this mission and head out of the cave. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. Rich and I love talking about Young Justice, but we would not be doing this if it was not for you out there listening. So thank you so much for being a part of this project. And hey, see you later, armadillos.
Don't forget to keep binging YJ on Netflix. Hashtag buy YJ comics on Comixology. You can also use the hashtag YJ3 or Young Justice Season 3 if you're talking about Young Justice on social media so that you can join others posting things out there. And as always, remember, everybody, stay whelmed.
You've been listening to Whelmed, the Young Justice Files podcast. Our computer is voiced by Madison Ray. Our theme was composed by Emily Mio. Our logo was created by Kevin Bates. Whelmed is a fan-made podcast and is not officially affiliated with DC Comics, DC Entertainment, Warner Brothers Animation, and any other owners of Young Justice or its related source material. As such, these companies have sole ownership of all symbols, images, names, logos, and proprietary material related to Young Justice. Original content of this podcast is ours under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening, and stay whelmed.